I'm Trevor Aleo, and this is Conceptually Speaking, a show that's all about engaging experts in dialogue about the concepts and patterns that help us understand our world. Each week, I chat with guests from a variety of fields to better understand how their cognitive processes and social practices help them navigate complexity and solve wicked problems in their domain. Whether chatting with academics or YouTubers or educational leaders or neuroscientists, every episode is an invitation to explore meaningful questions and reconceptualize what we think and feel about education. What if I told you there's a magical place where young people spend hours upon hours discussing, sharing, creating, and theorizing about their favorite books? Would you believe me if I told you that place was TikTok? Or more specifically, a special corner of TikTok known as Book Talk. Well, that's what this week's episode is all about. My guest is Dr. Sarah Jarasa, Assistant Professor of Literacy at Clemson University in the Department of Education and Human Development. In addition to being a friend of the show and fellow member of the Writing and Literacy's Special Interest Group, Sarah is currently researching the impact of Book Talk on reading, writing, and creating content about literature. Far from being a random trending topic or a flash in the pan hashtag, the discourse on Book Talk has already proven to have had a major impact on the publishing industry and features millions of book lovers connecting over their most loved and loathed texts. Considering the popularity and influence digital spaces is having on literacy practices, Sarah believes, and I agree, it's high time English teachers begin to consider how we can expand what counts as literacy in academic spaces.
Like, there's a reason why millions of people are not only just going to this space, but continuing to go to these spaces, because there's something about them that is pulling them and keeping them and wanting them to continue to engage, either in reading outside, right, of the space, or engaging together. And I just think that these are the types of things that we want to help support our young readers and writers to be able to do and see that there's like value. And this also counts, like redefining it, like what counts for reading and writing.
Even if you have no idea what a For You page is, or even if you're generally anti-social media or anti-TikTok, this episode still has a lot of worthwhile food for thought about the relationship between academic literacies, youth literacies, and the future of English language arts. I hope you enjoy. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the show.
Hi, it's so good to be here, Trevor.
So I have been wanting to talk to you about your research on TikTok, specifically Book Talk, for quite some time. We have talked about it some, we've talked around it in some of the other pieces that we're working on together, but this podcast is really a giant excuse to dive into the deep nitty-gritty of your Book Talk research and to learn a little bit more. So can you kind of start our audience off with a quick overview of what your research is and where you see it going?
Yeah, so almost like a Book Talk 101, if you might say. So my research really focuses in on the digital space of Book Talk, which is the sub-community for readers and book lovers in TikTok. You probably have seen lots of TikToks. Maybe your students have been dabbling and watching what's going on with Swift Talk right now and all the things that are happening. But specifically in the Book Talk space, it's really centered on a love of all things that have to do with like reading and books and authors. And so content contributors will make videos that have to do with like book reviews, kind of just highlighting their favorite parts of a book, their favorite characters, a lot of kind of fangirling or fan fiction kind of happens in this space. A lot of showing of their shelfies, which is just basically their bookshelves, and just showing the aesthetic beauty of having a full collection of a series. It really spans quite a wide variety of content. But what's really interesting about this space is, for me, coming in as an education researcher, is seeing how multimodal composition is happening in this space, how meaning as like audio, visual, all of these different tools that are being used to kind of like use like trending audio to kind of develop more meaning. And then specifically thinking about like how this has been a space in a community that is really elevating and shifting how people are reading. I was talking to a colleague earlier just about the fact that like a lot of times TikTok is kind of being dismissed as just like an entertainment, kind of like a fad, kind of like a thing that just like the youth are using and we don't really care about. But like they're making a lot of strides and like having economic power, because like in book talk, there are books like Cemetery Boys by Aidan Thomas. I think it was published in like 2017 or 2018. And it hit the New York Times bestseller list in 2020 at the height of like TikTok, because of all of the viral videos that were going on. And so booksellers and publishers are seeing the like weight and the like impact of this community. And it's having a lot of economic weight. And so when you think about that outcome of, you know, people coming and joining into this digital space, engaging in something that they really love, shifting their identities, thinking about becoming more motivated to want to read because they want to participate in this space. I think there's a lot that we as teachers and educators can really think about. What does this mean to be a reader today? And redefine what it means to be a reader. My background is always been in elementary school. So that's the classrooms that I always taught, fourth grade. And something that was always really important to me is that I wanted my students to love reading and see themselves as readers. But unfortunately, a lot of students today are not in classrooms where that like love of learning is really being fostered. It's really just kind of being shoved down their throats of like, this is what reading has to look like. And it needs to be assessed and measured, and your achievement needs to be, you know, datafied. So my recent work with my dissertation really looked to see like how reading motivation for book talk participants has really, you know, changed. And it has. And I think that there's a lot more that's happening in these spaces. And I think other like kind of digital spaces, kind of like pockets of spaces, that are really fostering a real love and engagement as of a reading identity.
Yeah, and as you're talking, it got me thinking about how so often the assumption is school is the only site of discourse about books for kids. And yeah, of course, maybe they'd have conversations prior to TikTok or social media. Maybe they would be in the library. It's not that those things weren't happening. It's not that kids weren't talking about books. But I think TikTok sort of put it in the face of everybody, right? That kids are engaging in conversation about these literary works in ways that are, like you're saying, sort of shaping the publishing industry. And yeah, I just think it's so fascinating that teachers and researchers are having to kind of face and wrestle with the fact that school isn't the only place where kids read and talk about books. And I know that sounds a little silly or trite at first glance, but I think that, you know, even just the implicit understanding of most teachers is, well, if kids aren't reading, you know, in school, then they're not reading at all. Or if kids aren't doing well on, you know, this reading test, that like they don't have a reading identity. So could you talk a little bit more about how TikTok is sort of making very public the fact that kids are engaging in conversations about books outside of academic spaces, and in ways that on the one hand maybe depart from how academics typically think about reading and conversations about reading, but in other ways, because I know you brought in some Rosenblatt, maybe kind of fold into ways that reading has been theorized previously?
Yeah. I hope I answered all of your really good questions, Trevor.
It was like so eight.
I know, there were a lot.
Pick whichever one, sorry.
The one thing that your question kind of first made me think about was the fact that in my research, a lot of the participants I spoke to who are in book talk, they spoke to a lot of the ways that they personally redefined reading for themselves, right? What does it mean to be a reader? And initially, a lot of their definitions of how they framed themselves or saw themselves in academic spaces was like, I had to be a really fast reader, right? Like I needed to read a lot of things really quickly. I needed to read books that were really thick or big, right? That's what a reader needs to do. And what a lot of participants started talking about is that they, in reading by themselves or reading in this within and participating in this space, redefined what reading really needed to be for them. One participant talked about how she was diagnosed with dyslexia when she was in elementary school, and she just struggled. Like, it was really hard. Every little kind of task was really challenging for her. But like, she wanted so badly to be able to engage and see herself as a reader. And she discovered audiobooks as like this amazing tool for her to be able to still engage in the conversations. Like, her favorite book series was Percy Jackson, which, like, I mean, who doesn't love a good Percy Jackson? Yeah, right? And she was like, because I was able to like engage in this conversation about this book, I used the audiobook, but I never knew that it counted as reading because no one really allowed that to be the case. But like, I read all the time, but I use audiobooks. And like, to me, that counts as reading. And so hearing, you know, participants talk about the fact that like, we don't have to have like the paperback book, and it doesn't have to be like a printed text for it to count as a book. Or it can be like being able to read a multimodal like aspect. It can be reading in lots of different ways. And I think that's one consideration that I think, school, myself included, like as an, you know, a teacher educator, of like really pushing pre-service teachers to rethink, what does it mean to read and what does it need to look like, and how labels of students can really be harmful. Like, you know, Donna Alverman, who I just love reading her work, but like talks about like the negative impacts of like when we call students like non-readers or like poor readers, right? Like, there's a lot of like self-esteem that's kind of like imprinted on students when we label them this way. And I think that like TikTok kind of like removes people from that space and kind of places them in a like, I can be safe to kind of like dabble and try things out on my own. I talked to a couple of participants that were just like, I didn't see myself in a lot of the books that were presented to me in school, right? Like, there weren't any books of characters that looked like me or authors who had the same experiences as me. One participant, he identifies as a queer Black male. And so like, he's like, there were definitely none of those books in my classroom. So like, when I started going on TikTok and seeing and hearing people talk about queer and LGBTQ plus stories, I was really interested. And like, for the first time, I couldn't put a book down. And so I think a lot of this is like these intentional choices of how we kind of see reading situated in schools. And like, I think almost it's like widening what can be and what can count and why those things are really important to kids and, you know, as readers, as we develop. And so, you know, it's not all just like, oh, you can choose anything you want and everything's just wonderful and perfect. But like, I think we really have to start thinking about what student agency and autonomy looks like in classrooms and schools, because we can no longer just have like teachers be the top down of like, this is what it must look like. This is what reading must look like. You must read the canon, right? Like, we really need to expand what else is out there, because if we're only limiting our students to this very narrow idea of what reading is, we're missing out on so many like really great experiences. And you kind of dabbled into some of my like interests of like thinking about Rosenblatt's work around like reader responses and like how we as in an individual interact with like a text. And I use text as the, you know, quotation marks, because you know, the way that we bring in our background knowledge and our experiences and how a particular text or character can really stick with us is really meaningful. And I think when we have those dialogues to share that with others, there's like this really like impactful like exchange. Like, I talked to one of my best friends. She's an elementary school librarian in Washington, D.C. And so she and I have a book club, but it's not like a real book club. It's our joke. It's anything in a wine glass book club, where we start with a wine glass that can have anything in it. And we'll just talk about the books that like we're currently reading. And sometimes it'll be like a crossover. And there's just something about when she and I are talking about the same book, we're like, oh my gosh, did you get to this part? I can't even believe it. How did you think about it? Like, there was no like scripted answers or questions. It was just like having a really genuine, like shared experience with somebody I really care about something that we both share in common. And I mean, isn't that what communication and like our literacies really are, is like having those dialogic opportunities? And why can't we have that be happening in school in a really authentic way?
I mean,
I don't know if I answered all your questions, Trevor, but like,
I don't know if it's possible to have answered all my questions, because I have many questions simmering in my mind right now. And I just thought it was so fascinating the way that you described those conversations, and it hearing the natural, the organic, the, you know, communal bonding kind of like nature of that literacy experience just makes what happens in school feels so instrumentalized and weird, right? Where, you know, if we think about what it means to be literate and to engage with other people, so much of what we do when it comes to reading instruction and trying to shape readers is this like really instrumentalized process of trying to replicate certain forms of literacy and certain orientations towards reading and certain, you know, quote unquote skills or whatever, and how kids internalize that to the point where they just see a big book and they're like, oh, big book better, me read fast, right? And it's like, wow, what happens in school is so weird, you know, compared to like the just sort of way that we engage with reading and literacy outside of school. So do you, I'm assuming that you've talked to some of your pre-service teachers. I know that that was part of your dissertation too. How are they reacting to this invitation to expand their perspective on reading?
You know, I'm a first year faculty member at Clemson, so I'm just kind of like jumping fully in and saying, well, let's see how this goes. But I sort of framed it with my students. So I'm teaching two courses, one for the elementary program and one for the early childhood program. In both of my classes, I framed it of, I want them to think about a literacy memory that they've had in their schooling. So it could be any part of their experience, but a memory that they have about reading and writing. And something that's come across consistently for my students has been to talk about the things that they love and when they loved reading. And the times that they loved reading is when they got to choose the books. Like, almost, I don't know if like they all got the memo, but like the other part of the assignment is for them to think about what they want their future classrooms to look like and what they want literacy to feel like in their space. And they time and time again talk about this love, right? They want students to engage, to love the things that like are about reading and writing, and to see the value of it. But they want choice. They want students to have that choice. And so I think my pre-service teachers are definitely open to it. I think the turn happens when they start seeing some of the limitations that happen when you're in a school setting. You know, I'm here in South Carolina, so like we have a lot of like kind of restrictions of like what needs to happen as far as like curriculum. And I think grades, unfortunately, like have a lot to do with it, right? Like once you start saying like, I need to assess or monitor, then that becomes like a whole other ball game. But I still do think that there's space for that, right? And I think that you can do both and, right? It just needs to be intentional, but it also needs to be like having some like open space for students and knowing what reading can look like, that it's, you can trust that students are doing that internal work, that hard internal work. There's a lot to kind of unpack about it. And I am really excited for like the students that are going to be future teachers, because I think they have a lot of that intention of reflecting on maybe what was the experiences that they've had in schooling that did not help them or foster a love that maybe they wanted, or they changed, right? Like a lot of them talked about how much they loved reading and writing when they were in elementary school, but it really shifted when they were in middle school and high school, and like how they want to come back to that. So I don't think it's lost. I just think it requires us as teachers to kind of have a different responsibility. And I think a lot of that's going to be like really trusting the teachers that are in classrooms to know that like these are the ways to support readers, and it doesn't have to come out of a scripted packaged program. I think once we start viewing and supporting teachers as less than the technicians of a curriculum, I feel like that's when we will start seeing more of student agency and autonomy coming back into the classroom.
Kind of folding into and building off of that idea of imagining that student you were mentioning earlier who said that they did not see themselves as a reader, but book talk opened them up to this other way of engaging with text that helped them see that they were. And I think that that kind of speaks to the fact that, you know, just because students feel maybe closed off from the forms of literacy that they're seeing in school doesn't mean that they are a quote unquote like bad reader or that they don't like get reading. And if, you know, of course, you know, that isn't to downplay the struggles that students have, you know, gaining academic literacy or anything like that. But I think that oftentimes the tools and the instruments that we use to measure and talk and frame these things are so narrow that the sort of deficit mindset that we adopt when we're trying to figure out how to assist these students is just more scripting, more piling on, as opposed to an integration, as opposed to a both and, as opposed to building bridges between these different literacies.
Yeah. So something, so I taught a children's literature course at the University of Houston while I was in my doc program. And I had my pre-service teachers make book talks. We watched them, we made them, we loved them. And one thing that came out from a lot of that work, so my pre-service teachers were reading a lot of children's books as part of the class. And like, if you've been on book talk, there really isn't a very strong presence of children's books, right? Because most of the content that's on that space is geared towards like young adult books or adult books. But like many things on the internet, you just have to search long enough and you can find various things if you need to. So my students created, we watched and we looked at mentor texts of book talks, and they created book talks using for like based on what they saw, what they liked, what kind of spoke to them as like a form of reader response. And like Trevor, it was so cool just to see like the books that they were choosing, the parts of the books that were really kind of speaking to them, but the ways that they were like interpreting gave me such an insight to how they were reading that like, I can only think that like for them, the reading experience was different because of the ways that they were choosing to interact and engage with the text. Like they even said, like, I knew I wasn't just reading it just to read it. I was reading the book because I was thinking about all these ways that I could capture like the beauty of it, or I wanted to share this part with an audience member or a viewer. And it just made me think so much of the ways that like, you know, kind of like when I'm having a conversation, like if I'm talking with you about like a design analysis framework per se, I'm thinking about what you, Trevor, are like going to be taking away. But when we allow these kinds of spaces and opportunities for students of all age levels, right? Like K through whatever, 16, right? Like when we allow these spaces for them to like play, because I think it all has to do with play as well, but really make their own choices within systems of choice that are kind of like, you can choose these things or these aspects, but it's really up to you about how you want to make meaning. I think it's more than just the product, right? Like I came away with like 20 amazing book talks on some children's books, like, yes, but like the process of making that and the intentions that were going behind it, I think speak volumes for the ways that my students were actively reading children's books.
Yeah, and that goes on into one of the things we've had some conversations about, and I think both of us are quite interested in, which is how the introduction of discourse communities like Book Talk is the creation of an audience and the sort of awareness of context, right? These interpretive and communicative processes are now happening in a way where the kids realize, or that the pre-service teachers realize, that they are situated, they are entangled in these communities. And it's not just, you know, the sort of stilted audience of, you know, teacher or students in the class. It's not just the, well, I'm going to work on my, you know, video analysis skills. They're thinking, how can I meaningfully participate and contribute to this fandom, this community, this affinity space that I'm a part of? And that creation of audience, to me, I feel like is so powerful, important, and interesting. Because I've seen a lot
of people. Because you know why? Like, Trevor, honestly, what a lot of the participants, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but like.
No, go for it. No, I love it.
Like, what a lot of participants said is that, like, they finally felt like their voice mattered, right? Like, what they had to say about a book or their creative way about how they attached, like, a Michael Scott from The Office meme, audio meme, to, like, what they were thinking about. Like, not only did they put it out there, but, like, it mattered. And it had a response from other people. And, like, I was talking to somebody about this today, about like, it's not just about the front facing like video that we see on Book Talk on our feed, but like, it also has to do with the like conversation that's happening in a textual way in the comments. And so like these interactions that people have, as far as like, I'm going to like this, I'm going to save this, I'm going to follow this. Like, these are all kind of responses that we have that might not necessarily be like, oral or kind of like a regular, you know, dialogue, but they're all forms of responses. And I think that for many people who maybe don't always feel like their voice is heard or they found a community, like they really truly believe, and I believe too, but like when they're putting their content out, like they're speaking to an audience that is captivating and wanting to hear what they have to say. And I think that, you know, when you think about some students in classrooms in traditional schools, like there are times that students do not talk or are not heard. And so when you think about that, it makes me cringe. But I think we owe it to have our students be heard in lots of different ways, and to hear each other, right? Like, and be heard also for like their opinion matters, their thoughts about things matter, you know? And I think that's another reason why, like in my courses that I'm teaching, I'm really trying to elevate the fact that like, we can't just ask students just to do some random assignment that doesn't really have any impact or meaning, because kids are smarter than that. So like, you know, we need to be thinking about how the things that they're going to be working on can be impactful and heard beyond just the four walls of a classroom. And this is not a new thing. Like, we've been talking about this since like the early 2000s of like thinking about deeper learning, right? Like, this is not new, but it just always seems like it's a revolutionary kind of thing of like, what? We want them to like talk to people outside of the classroom and like have an authentic audience. And I mean, that's just really, and I think that TikTok, even though it's not a school space, like, let's not say like it is, it's not, right? Like, it's a social media, it's a public space, it's a company, right? But the affordances of the space allow for people to be able to post and to put things that matter to them. And for that to be disseminated to a very wide algorithm of being able to deliver it to other users. So
and I think for, you know, any techno skeptics in the audience who are, you know, have understandable concerns about TikTok as like a platform, I think that both Sarah and I would hear those and acknowledge the fact that this is just like one platform right now where this discourse is happening. And, you know, in 10 years, I'm sure there will be another one. And it's not necessarily specifically about, you know, one or the other, but rather the fact that there are these digital spaces and pockets and networks, you know. And I'm sure that if you know, TikTok disappeared tomorrow, there would be Discord servers where these conversations were happening. And I say that to bring up the fact, even though, Sarah, you say that, you know, this isn't revolutionary, we've been talking about this, I'm going to size you a little bit and say that I am guilty of being like, oh, we need to create for authentic audiences. And like, that becomes like, you know, your neighbor or your parent, or just a way to get kids to care a little bit more because there's the extra pressure of an adult human or another kid in another classroom seeing this. But right. what's new to me, and I think is really powerful and interesting, is it's like, no, your audience is this community, this fandom, this space that you're a part of. And there are yeah. really subtle, complex, like, you know, layered ways of engaging with that community that you know, I mean, as a teacher, I don't know. And you as a student do. And the ability to navigate those different spaces feels like what English language arts should be or should integrate in order for it to prepare kids for anything resembling the future.
We really just have to start rethinking and reimagining what schooling and literacy specifically in schools needs to be. And the real role of social components, like the ways that we sociocognitively like learn, we need to disseminate and think about how we all, students, teachers, all education partners come in with, you know, funds of knowledge and experiences that are really meaningful. And these collective knowledge pieces that we can bring to a shared collaborative learning space, I think is really important. And oftentimes it's minimalized. It's kind of like, oh yeah, let's, yeah. what are you thinking? Right. But like really having that curriculum and like literacies be kind of much more of a, like, I guess like a grassroots sort of thing of like, we're all kind of doing this in a more organic way. And I also just think of it being like, I just really think we need to change and shift, like, who gets to learn from our thinking, right? And so how can that be more collective and just really kind of just see some things differently? I was really fortunate to work in a school like 2010. It was called the Bloomington Project School, which was a really like, it was a charter school, but it was arts infused and it was project based. And, but it wasn't just like project based because like, oh, we're going to do some really fun projects, right? It was a project based that was really foundationed in, or kind of like centered in problems and places. And it's kind of stemmed from Harvard's Project Zero. But like, we always started with like a very compelling and generative question that kind of was thinking about like, what are connections? What is power? How do we use justice to support one another? And like from there, we did amazing literacy work where students were engaging in projects that weren't just like a trifold poster about like all that they know, right? Like,
yeah,
they were doing community work. They were going in and actively trying to support and like raise money or engage with the community or reach out. And I just see so much of the model of that school of being just like, and it was hard work, right? Like as a teacher, it was not like, I couldn't plan like an entire like unit by myself because I planned and taught alongside with my students, right? Because what they wanted to study and how they wanted to study through inquiry really was what we did. That's how we did it, right? We generated a lot of the teaching kind of not on the fly, but like it was, we worked a lot, but I felt like the work and then the learning that was being done was so genuine and so meaningful. As a teacher, it was something I felt like I was not telling my students, but I was really co-learning with them about, you know, thinking about impacts of like natural disasters and thinking about like water and thinking about like stereotypes and revolutions, right? Like there were just so many things that we were really able to do. And I felt very supported by my school community to be able to do in that way. So I just think that we have to start rethinking what school can look like in order for that to happen. That's a lot easier said than done. But I just have a lot of really good hopes for like the fact that I think that can be what needs to happen. And I think kind of like to your point, Trevor, about the fact that like when we're teaching like, you know, ELA or talking about like reading strategies, we have to just be thinking beyond just like the purpose is to answer a question on a test, right? Or like, how can we prepare students to be doing the hard thinking, critical thinking that we want and need to prepare them for? And a lot of that is just also finding joy too. Like, what are the things yeah. that like really bring people together and the things that are interesting to them. And a lot of that means also like having a community. And so that I think all kind of goes together of like, how do we do that? Well, we also have to have a community where that learning and that thinking is valued and honored, and things don't have to all look the same. I really just think that we just need to do some like kind of revolutionary, but like just also just like different stuff that's going to be meaningful. So, which is why when I talk about book talk to like educators, and I'm like, isn't this just like, look how cool this is. Like, can't you see this is just like what we used to do with like book trailers, like on what is it, Movie Maker, on like iMovie or whatever, right? Like, this is really cool, you know? And so for me, I also just find a lot of joy in the things that I get to see. And I'm like, this could be so, like, I want to go back into a classroom and be able to do these things, right? And just let kids get really excited about this kind of work and these kinds of ways that they can engage with one another. I think I've shared with you, Trevor, but like my son, who's 9, he's super into all things Minecraft. He's super into Roblox, and he's super into like coding for games. Like, right. Like he built a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, like video game on code.
That's
and
legit.
He's never really seen Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Like, I felt like, and as a child of the 80s, I really need to like educate him. But like for him, like he does these things because he has a real captive audience of friends online and, you know, in real life, you know, his parents and family all want to know what he's up to because he's really excited to share that and then to celebrate it and then to learn new things about how to do it. Like, I did not teach him how to code anything. These are all things that he's learned from other friends or other ways that he's kind of engaged with them. And Roblox, like he figured it out because of all of the things that he had from his online community. And so like, I think that's amazing because I don't know any of these things, but this is something that he is so committed to because of these experiences. And so why can't we have that also for reading and writing?
Yeah. I mean, and to your point, you know, you said that your son is 9, and kids younger ages have access to the tools and, you know, the audience, whether that be friends, family, or the wider interwebs, to do meaningful work that people like appreciate and take in and consume and dialogue about. And I can understand why so many students feel like the work they do in school is so inauthentic and so hollow, because it's the one place where they are, you know, engaging these literacies that they don't feel like it is a living, breathing thing where they are getting feedback and having discourse and interchange, and people appreciate the work that they do. Instead, it's this really static, you know, trading of, I do the thing and I get the grade back, and maybe I talk to my friends about the grade or something.
Yeah,
that just feels like a radical shift that kids have to kind of go through. And I can understand why that would be challenging. Are you finding that your pre-service teachers are, you know, I've recently had a reckon with the fact that I'm a millennial and I'm not like the cool young generation anymore. So having these Gen Z teachers come in, I know it's a lot. I'm talking to people about it. I'll get through it. But as there is this generation who's used to these literacy experiences coming through, you know, your program or that you're talking to, do you find they're more open to this because of their, you know, past experiences online and in digital spaces?
I don't know. And I say that because I would assume, yes, of course they are, because they're all online. But like, I think school has done a really, I guess, a good job of making it very clear of like, this is what reading needs to look like. And this is how reading needs to be when we're teaching it, right? And writing needs to look like this. And we need to have these as almost discrete things. We can't mix them up, right?
Yeah.
So like I'm teaching content area literacy. So like, how do we think about reading and writing in the content area spaces? And I keep talking about like, you know, the ways that we kind of like consume information. Like if I'm listening to a podcast, I'm consuming information and I'm using my literacies to make sense of it. And I'm thinking about like how then I'm going to go on the, you know, Google, and I'm going to look up some different things to continue my learning of like how I'm thinking about things. Like many of my students are still trying to figure out like what counts, right? Because their own experiences in school.
So well said.
Yeah. Like this is what counts as reading. Reading must look like X, Y, and Z. Writing has to look like this. Science has to look like this, right? Math, that's just numbers. So like that has to look. And so it's been challenging to kind of reframe for them, like how reading can look different for students. Yeah. How I did an example where I was reading a kid's picture book. It's called Mapping Penny's World. And it's very cute. It's about this girl that decides to make maps of her dog's world and the dog's perspective. It's great, right? And I was talking about how we can use this example and really think beyond just like one standard of a social studies, you know, standard, and think about like how we can take it bigger. Like what are the bigger concepts of it, right? And so like writing doesn't have to look like an assignment. It can just be a way that we're communicating, or just, I don't know. I think just because free service teachers right now who are in programs are on TikTok or on social media or using computers, and, you know, they're considered like these digital natives, right? That doesn't necessarily mean that they see the affordances of these spaces for teaching. I think something that's interesting is that when I did that project with my pre-service teachers with Children's Lit, where they made book talks, most of my students in that class were all on TikTok, right? They like watched it, right? They were users. Some of them made videos, but most of them would just like kind of do their scroll. And more times than not, students were like, I didn't know that this could be count. I didn't know that this could count as like reading and writing. Like, this is so much fun. I didn't know this could count. Like, how does the thing that I like to do when I'm waiting for the bus count as something that could be used to inform or kind of like guide my reading and writing that I do with students? And I think that that's where, as a teacher educator, I really want to kind of keep pushing the boundary of like what counts, and kind of pushing that kind of like idea of this is what school has to look like, because it's always looked like that, right? Like, one of my favorite professors from my DOP program talked about how we always can look and figure out what a classroom is, right? Because we've always seen what these classic kind of like things that would define and make a classroom, right? Like students' desks or places for them to sit. And there's a place where this teacher stands in the front and there's rows, right? Like we know what that means because that's a classroom. And so like, how can we change that, right? Like, how do we change it? Not just in the physical space, but then like, how do we change that in the ways that that space is used? And then how do we think about like, you know, how can literacies from out of school also have a place in school? Like, how can we make that happen? So that's something I've been playing a lot with, because I really feel like the benefits and the affordances of like book talk, right? Like it's increasing like, you know, notions of like social capital of like people wanting to engage because they want to talk with other people. Community, this whole notion of like, I want to kind of get the gist of like the, what it means, right? Like making meaning. I mean, like you would think that these are things that we could make happen in classrooms. So.
Well, and what really sends me, as the youth say, is even what is happening in like traditional classrooms that is quote unquote like, you know, academic or the content area, it doesn't even reflect the actual disciplinary practices, right? Like I'm going to just take it at College Board and AP for a moment, right? There was no point in my English career where I was sat down and told to, I was going to be given a random poem or random piece of fiction that isn't bracketed by genre, isn't bracketed by historical period, isn't bracketed by author, literally any text from the history of, you know, the English language, and I'd have to analyze it right there on the spot in an hour. That is the most inauthentic practice, yeah. Right? But what does AP courses turn into? Understandably, training grounds for that kind of work that just isn't reflective of actual yeah. disciplinary work. So that also drives me nuts. That even what yeah. we do when we say we're doing, you know, disciplinary work or creating, you know, fostering kids' ability to do this, it's not. It's like this yeah. weird, like plastic
manipulation
wrap version. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, this is going to help you prepare for the real world. Well, has it? You know? And like, yeah. I think about this as like a writer too, Trevor, of like, what really helped frame or help support myself as a writer. It wasn't like the red pen. It wasn't like all of yeah. the like grades. I couldn't tell you a grade, but I do know the like ways that my writing either like impacted or elicited a conversation with somebody else. Of like, when you said this really meant a lot. And I was like, whoa, that's great feedback. Thank you. Like, so I just think about like these community conversations that can really be beneficial. They can support the literacies. And I just think that we have a responsibility to be able to see these spaces, like digital spaces, TikTok, whatever, MySpace, whatever you want to call it, right? Like that there's an important, yeah, exactly. Like important work and meaningful things are happening in these spaces. And I think we just have to like, we can't discredit them just because we think it's just trendy, like, you know, entertainment, right? Like, yes, there might be some like security issues, like with TikTok. I get it. Okay. An algorithm. Yes. It's probably very skewed, but I just also think that like, there's a reason why millions of people are not only just going to the space, but continuing to go to these spaces, because there's something about them that is pulling them and keeping them and wanting them to continue to engage, either in reading outside, right, of the space or engaging together. And I just think that these are the types of things that we want to help support our young readers and writers to be able to do and see that there's like value. And this also counts, like redefining it, like what counts for reading and writing.
Yeah, that needs to be a t-shirt, you know, redefining what counts. Because I think that so much of it comes down to that. And it just doesn't mean that, you know, other forms of more, you know, literary or traditional English have to be jettisoned, but we just have to acknowledge that's not the only thing that counts, and it can't anymore, or the discipline will die.
Yeah. And like, and I just think that we just have to be open to like redefining and like accepting that all of these ways that we're seeing the world or we're engaging in this way, or we're choosing to use different modes, like there's a lot of great meaning. And
yeah,
you don't have to love everything, right? Like there's some things on TikTok that I'm kind of like, what's up? But for the most part, like, I think we just have to acknowledge that there are affordances and that some people are able to engage in this space and feel safer than maybe they do in classrooms, which I think is something that needs to at least be acknowledged about the fact that like there's acceptance and affirmation that's happening in some of these community spaces that aren't always happening in schools. So
yeah, and you know, if in addition to recognizing what counts, honoring the fact that students are seeking spaces where they can feel like, you know, they count as well, which is, you know, a really important part of being in not just a literacy community, but any community. So yeah. If students want to learn more about expanding their notion of what counts and figuring out who counts in depending on the space that they're in, where can they go to check out more of your research on digital literacies and book talk and reading and communities?
So is this where I get to plug in like all the things about me? All right. Well, I'm on Twitter, but I'm not very active sometimes, although I am hosting a Twitter chat tomorrow. I'm at Sarah E. Conroy. And I know you're probably like, what? But that was my maiden name and I just have never changed it. You can actually find me on TikTok if you want to. You won't see very much because I'm the researcher, but I'm the book talk researcher. on TikTok. And then you can visit my website, which is www.sarahjarasa.com. Is that how people say, like they give their whole like little spiel, Trevor?
No, you nailed it. Nailed it. Promo, perfect. Plug, done and dusted.
Yeah. Or you can just look up and kind of Google book talk and usually my name pops up too.
Oh, I like that. That was a good subtle flex. All right. Yeah. So thanks so much, Sarah, for coming on the show. I really enjoyed it and I can't wait for folks to hear this.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Trevor.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Conceptually Speaking. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and are coming away with a stronger grasp of the concepts and mental models that help us understand our world. If you like this podcast, feel free to like, comment, or subscribe on your favorite platform.